And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson, thank you very much for making us a part of your Friday. We're going to talk to Mitch Harper coming up here momentarily. We'll get the latest on what's going on with Mark Pope as BYU now is looking for a new basketball coach. But Ben, we are live today from Peach Doors and Windows, one of our very favorite places.
Yeah, stop on by and say hi, hang out with us. We'd love to see you stop in. We've got some jazz gear. We've got candy. What do we have? We got all kinds of stuff to give away. So if you're in the area, you want to swing by, say hello, get some inside information on all the goings on with the world of sports, which is plentiful here in the state of Utah. We got you covered.
2940 South, 300 West. 2940 South, 300 West. And it's back off 300 West just a little bit, but you'll see the peach sign out front. It's real easy to find, and we'd love to see you. So 2940 South, 300 West, and we'll talk about it throughout the day, but if you have the need for windows and doors, Peach is where to go, and you can always call them. Get a free in-home estimate. Just consult with them, 801-566-1255, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. And again, that address, 2940 South, 300 West. All right, we'll talk to Mitch about Coach Pope and the now open coaching vacancy at BYU coming up here momentarily. But Ben, you and I were both at the Jazz game last night. First time in almost a month that I got to do a post game after a win.
Hey, that was a great game. I mean, the basketball, when it delivers, is still an absolutely great product. And I know that the pieces there aren't necessarily what, you know, season ticket holders probably bought tickets for last offseason, but that was a fun game to watch. Kenneth Lofton was great. Keontae George had his best game in a long time, still kind of throwing the ball all over the gym in the fourth quarter, but I thought played really well. Bright spots from Bryce Sensabaugh. But you know what they did? They played hard. Like, it's going to sound really cliche. They respected the game, and the game respected them in return, and they got a home win and finished their home season schedule with a record above 500.
No, this year was the play hard and pass year for the Utah Jazz. If you want to explain the games they won and the games they lost, it really comes down to that. The games they played hard and passed, they won.
Yep.
And when they didn't do that, they lost.
Respect the game, it'll respect you, and the Jazz did last night.
All right, let's talk a little BYU. He covers the Cougs for KSLSports.com. He joins us on Fridays, and we always look forward to it. He is our buddy Mitch Harper. What's going on, Mitch?
Busy times, guys. It's always exciting to tackle a coaching search.
Did you get any sleep last night, Mitch?
Not much. Working the phones to, kind of get intel on this search. And, you know, it's always fascinating with BYU because – unlike a place like Kentucky where you're tossing out Dan Hurley's, it's Dan Hurley D-Day, yet it ends up being Mark Pope. There's a clear understanding of who the real targets are at BYU. And you know, it's a matter of what does Tom Homo, who his top candidates are and who he feels is the best fit. And to his credit, this will be his third head coaching search. He was in Florida yesterday with BYU's cheer squad, and now that's got to, altering the schedule a little bit, but he's done a nice job with hiring basketball coaches in the past with Dave Rose and Mark Pope. Now he tackles his third opportunity.
Take us through yesterday before we really dig into to the candidates for now that open job, Mitch. Obviously, Kentucky went through a couple of options before they got to Pope, which shouldn't be a surprise, but how quickly did it come together yesterday as far as you could tell?
Yeah, it was moving at light speed. I mean, it was about 9 a.m. Mountain Time, Scott Drew, or 9:30 Mountain Time when Scott Drew issued his public statement. And then I started getting word that, Mark Pope had scheduled meetings with different divisions of BYU's, campus and, areas of the school for planning sessions for the upcoming year. And then those abruptly got canceled, and he was on the move, and no one was getting in touch with him and could contact him, and well, he was in Lexington finalizing to become the Kentucky head coach. So things move fast. And, you know, once Calipari got that Arkansas job, there was always that chance with Mark Pope to land Kentucky, even though their fan base never realized it. But, you know, Mark Pope has got a personality that we all know that can really impress. And he was aggressive in pursuing this job. And, you know, Mark Pope has, since he's been at BYU, he's been always kind of inserted himself into coaching searches and been aggressive with his agent to, you know, be part of the Arizona search a couple years ago when they replaced Sean Miller, and, you know, USC this year, and a little bit to a lesser degree with Louisville this coaching cycle. But when Kentucky opened, I mean, that was his dream, and he goes out and chases it, and it's pretty surreal in BYU history to see a BYU head coach not only leave BYU, because that's very rare, but to leave for one of the crown jewels in jobs in college basketball in that respective sport. So it's kind of unprecedented in that regard. And but it also speaks, I think, to how much NIL alignment with current universities. You know, if you've got a good spot like Nate Oates, where you've got your NIL, you've got your strong relationship with your AD and your school president, why leave? Why go to Kentucky? You know, 10 years ago, you say, yeah, I'm leaving Alabama to go to Kentucky. But that doesn't happen in this climate now with the NIL era. And, you know, for Mark Pope, where NIL was a frustrating point at times for BYU and him, how it's moved slower than most, he's on the move, and rightfully so, going to Kentucky.
Yeah, I heard there was already $4 million donation up front for the NIL for this year's roster. So Mark Pope, with his $27 million coming to him over the next five seasons, is in a good spot. Well, speaking of Mark Pope, Mitch, let me ask you, who on BYU's current roster would you consider a Mark Pope guy? Who would you consider a BYU guy? And maybe who's a little bit of both, meaning who do we think could follow him to Kentucky?
I think BYU, or for Mark Pope guys, would be an Ali Khalifa, a Noah Waterman, you know, maybe a Fusini Traore. You know, BYU guy, I think you would fall under the category of Dallin Hall, potentially. You know, but I think in this era, it comes down to you know, NIL, but there is still that element at BYU where guys want to play at BYU. Richie Saunders, I'd say, feels like a BYU guy, but at the same time, you know, Kentucky could be waiting for him. And if Mark Pope wants to bring him along to Kentucky, that's pretty enticing. And you got to imagine that NIL opportunities would be pretty big there. So, but I think that, you know, BYU being in the Big 12 helps the cause to potentially maintain players. And I think that's what's critical for BYU going forward is, you know, typically in the past, when you think about like Kalani Sitake or even the Mark Pope search, these things would drag out 10, 12 days. And you just can't do that. I know BYU works slower, but the portal is open until May 1st. Players need to have assurances of who their coach is going to be moving forward. They need clarity. BYU's got to move faster than they've ever moved, and they got to get this done in a timely manner, because you know who the targets are. You got to go act now and go make a move and make it prompt. And so you can get some clarity for this roster to piece it together and then go attack the portal and add, you know, pieces. Once you do, probably lose some players in this transition.
Mitch Harper is with us, covers Cougs for KSLSports.com. All right, Mitch, take us through the short list. It took Mark Madsen about 30 seconds to pass on the job. So where are they going from there?
You got to zero in on Chris Burgess, Utah basketball assistant coach. And, you know, what's an intriguing piece to Burgess is that he has BYU coaching experience. And, you know, that matters a lot. You look at the history of BYU basketball and even to an extent BYU football, the coaches that have previous assistant coach history before becoming a head coach at BYU, they tend to succeed, you know, at a higher level. The ones that don't have previous BYU assistant coaching experience, they tend to have a steeper learning curve to navigate the uniqueness, the kind of, you know, kind of circumstances that come with being at BYU. Chris Burgess understands what BYU is, and he's got some, you know, relationships already with existing players that are in the program, like a Trevin Nell, a Tiki Ali Atiki. You know, he was heavily involved in the recruitment of Colin Chandler, the highest-rated recruit that BYU has signed in the internet era. So pieces like that, I think, add to the candidacy of Chris Burgess. And he's also recruited guys at Wasatch Academy, and he's got strong connections in the international recruiting scene, and he's been very aggressive in the transfer portal. In many ways, he's kind of like Mark Pope, where, yes, he wasn't a BYU guy as a player, but he played at the highest levels of the sport with Duke, as Mike Krzyzewski played at Utah, had a decorated international career, played a little bit in the NBA, but he's a big man too, and he can coach the big man. And there's a lot of similarities, and he learned under Mark Pope first time at UVU and BYU. Like, it's a big jump from being, you know, a Utah assistant coach to being a head coach in the Big 12, where you're going to battle with Scott Drew, with Bill Self, with Tommy Lloyd. I mean, that is a massive jump for Chris Burgess. But if BYU will continue on the path of hiring only LDS coaches, and in some extent, you know, Temple recommend LDS coach, your options are limited. And, you know, Chris Burgess fits that, and he's got that upside, he's got that potential, and he's got the BYU experience. So he would be, to me at this point, candidate number one. And then you go to Barrett Perry, UNLV assistant coach, and he was someone who was heavily involved in the coaching search before, when they ended up with Mark Pope. Remember, Mark Pope was in the mix for the UNLV job, the Nevada job, back then, and you know, UNLV was making a push to get Mark Pope, and there was kind of uncertainty, was BYU going to get Pope? And Barrett Perry was in the mix as maybe the number two guy before BYU ultimately landed Mark Pope. And Perry's been, you know, a guy that's coached in college basketball, very various levels, for about 20 or 30 years, excuse me, junior college, Division I. And he knows this scene too. You know, he's been a native of Payson, Utah, strong roots in Utah County, but also has good connections in recruiting. So those are the top two guys. And, you know, I got a whole big board up on KSLSports.com breaking down the candidates. But to me, those are the top two that BYU should pursue.
Mitch, does the next head coach of BYU have to be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
They do not. And, you know, BYU has expressed that, but – you know, there was a couple of years ago, Tom Holmo at an education week in 2021 talked about this topic and said that one of the reasons they tend to do go with LDS coaches, they understand, you know, BYU's culture of, you're going to have athletes that go serve missions for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You know, they come back and tend to want to maybe get married too. So understanding that dating culture, but it's not required. But still, you know, Tom Holmo, in his track record, when it comes to the big three jobs, men's basketball, women's basketball, and football, he hires LDS coaches. And I would expect more of the same going forward. It would be a pretty big shift from BYU's view. And if they did, I think there's one candidate that fits that billing, and that's Cody Feger. But, you know, if you're Cody Feger, you're probably very in close talks with Mark Pope. To maybe be, you know, get an assurance to maybe be on that Kentucky staff, and maybe you can make a pretty nice salary, a very nice salary at Kentucky as well. So if they did go that route, I think Cody Feger would make so much sense, because he has institutional knowledge of BYU from his time with Dave Rose and Mark Pope. But, you know, that he's not a member of the church. And whereas Chris Burgess, Barrett Perry, Casey Beard, Houston assistant coach, those guys are LDS coaches, and that's typically the path BYU goes.
Mitch, I know this is an impossible question to answer because there's so much that is going to happen, but regardless of who gets the job, how is this going to adjust expectations for next year?
Oh, it should adjust significantly, you know, because you have to – you're likely hiring a coach – clearly, you're hiring a coach that has no power conference experience. I think that's what makes this coaching search so fascinating, is that it's the first, you know, big head coaching hire with BYU as a power conference team. And you would like to think that BYU adjusts in a manner where the time frame gets sped up, because, you know, that's always been the wonder, or the thought about BYU is like, yes, you're at the big time now, but are you willing to do everything it takes to be big time? Because the Big 12 is, 9 out of the last 11 years, the best conference in college basketball in the regular season and the metrics. And are you willing to act like those programs do, or will you continue to do the BYU way? And the BYU way has been very successful for BYU for many years, but this level of competition is the likes of which they've never experienced before. I mean, last year is being deemed a success. You still went 10-8, and you had some really dud losses against Oklahoma State and Kansas State, where you didn't look good, and then you ultimately ended up the season losing to Duquesne. So there's going to be a little bit of setbacks, and you know the league gets better next year with the addition of Arizona. I mean, this league, I put my way too early power rankings, which already need to be adjusted. But you know, the depth of this conference is what's way better. You just stack up the teams and you go, man, this is going to be a gauntlet again. And so, yes, I think that it's got to be readjusted, because you're going to lose some players on this roster because Mark Pope's gone, and rightfully so, as they should. I mean, some of these guys, they don't, sign with BYU. Some, of course, did, as we talked earlier, but some are going to want to go chase that opportunity at Kentucky. So, yes, it's got to be readjusted, and maybe a reset of the clock of what expectations are for BYU in the Big 12 and in year two.
What do you expect of Mark Pope at Kentucky? I mean, I have some Kentucky fan friends that were heartbroken last night, but you give him the tools to recruit, unlike what he's been able to do at BYU, and I think it gets pretty interesting.
He's going to be one of the best coaches in college basketball. And, when I viewed him, I covered every step of the Mark Pope era at BYU, and he always operated at BYU as a guy that's one of the top 10 coaches in college basketball. Now, there was always a ceiling at BYU, but his demeanor, his way of operating, when he talks about relentless, he really is that. I mean, he was the perfect coach for BYU. Now, he rubbed shoulders, he turned some people off down at BYU because of that relentless nature. I mean, he where he's publicly going out saying, BYU moves slow on NIL. That's not going to always sit well with people around BYU, but you can't deny that what he did at BYU this past season, when no one was expecting anything of them, was quite the coaching job. And he'll always adjust, and he'll recruit to whatever he needs to do. And now you give him endless resources at Kentucky, he's going to do a dang good job there. And it was puzzling to me that Kentucky didn't just make him a top priority out of the beginning, because he really is a great fit for that spot, because Calipari, he didn't care about the brand of Kentucky. He was more worried about NBA draft night, whereas Pope will win those people over from that standpoint of he'll tap into the nostalgia, he'll tap into the understanding, the richness, the history of Kentucky, whereas he didn't really have that at BYU. He even acknowledged that the history of BYU was not known to him. He dove in and made sure he knew everything he needed to, but he lived it at Kentucky, and it's going to be a kind of a deeper, I think alums in this day and age work at schools, and I think he's going to do a dang good job, and it'll be fascinating to see how he fares there, but I think he'll do very well, and I think he'll emerge as one of the best coaches in the sport.
Mitch, I'm curious. Now, I think Tom Homo has done such a good job as the AD at BYU that he should keep that job forever if he wants. He should weekend at Bernie's that thing if he so desires. But do you know how much longer he wants to do this? Is there a chance this is his last big hire as AD at BYU?
I think there's a really good chance that could be the case. And, Tom operates on a year-by-year contract, and that's unique in college landscape, where ADs, they want to have that assurance they're under contract for a long term. Tom, he's got that year-by-year deal. I think, to your point, that he kind of calls his shots, and I'm sure he'd like to, have influence on maybe who that next individual is, to be the next AD. But, yeah, that's very possible that this could be maybe a legacy hire from the basketball side. And, Tom's, bread and butter has always been football. And he'll turn to people that he trusts with this basketball search. Brian Santiago is very involved with the men's basketball and women's basketball programs. And, Danny Ainge is always around BYU, and I'm sure he'll tap into him as a potential resource and thoughts on the hire. So, but Tom Homo, this could be, the last one for him. And he made it clear to me a couple months ago that, the football side, there's no hot seat for Kalani, and So now with this, Ben's basketball could maybe be the last.
Mitch, thank you. Appreciate it. Happy Friday. And
get some sleep.
Yeah, you try
sometime.
And get some rest. Hopefully BYU hire somebody soon for your sake.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mitch.
Mitch is going to be on with Jeremiah Jensen later today.
Mitch Harper. Well, keep it glued to Mitch's socials and, of course, KSLSports.com for the latest because Mitch is digging, I'm sure.
He also had a really good podcast last night about fallout for this and addressed all the players and coaching names and what it means for Mark Pope and what it means for BYU. You can find that at KSL Sports if you missed it. And they're looking for a more in-depth conversation on it. Mitch did a great job last night.
Listen, I don't like Kentucky basketball. Mm-hmm. I really never have. But I'm really hoping for Mark Pope's success for one simple reason. The fan base is so annoying about this hire. The fact that they're like rioting over hiring Mark Pope. I hope that he kills it just to rub those annoying fans' faces right in it. Because like, dude, these coaches are passing on your job for a reason.
Every coach.
Mark Pope had a ton of success at BYU, which is a really hard job, going into the Big 12, which was a really tall task. He did a great job, and I know he didn't win the NCAA tournament game, and he has not, but he's an alum, and he's a really good coach, and he wanted that gig. You know probably why Scott Drew didn't want that gig? Because you fans are so annoying, and if you turn on their coaches for simply having great success but not enough, I mean, Scott Drew has a job for life at Baylor.
Sure. It sounded like Scott Drew wanted the job and his family did not want to move to Lexington.
Well,
that's,
that was the rumor because of the plane thing,
that
right?
He had taken the job and accepted the job and brought his family up to confirm, and they said, Baylor's pretty cool. And they said, all right, we're going to go back to Baylor. If that's where you're going to be happy, that's where I'm going to be happy. It's crazy that nobody else would take that job.
I've never been to Lexington, but it must really suck if somebody's picking Waco.
Yeah.
Waco? Yeah.
We got to dive into this more. I want to talk about Mark Pope. I was flabbergasted when this story hit last night. I mean,
I was not. See, you didn't think it was going to happen. I thought there was a really good chance.
No, I thought we had passed this up. I thought when BYU lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament that ship had sailed. And then when he wasn't one of like the first two or three names we heard and they were going down this list, I just assumed somebody was going to take it before him. And they wanted other people to take it before him. But then they got to this point. And I'm so curious how this is going to work out. This is my new Bronco Mendenhall at Virginia. I cannot wait to see how this pans out.
I bet he does well. Although I don't think you have to be a blue blood to win in college basketball anymore. So I don't know if the built-in advantage is there.
I'll be curious. You know, one of the things that excites – well, we got to get into this more. One of the things that excites Kentucky fans is the rating of their recruiting class nationally. And Mark Pope is not going to bring in the number two recruiting class every year the way John Calipari did, or number one every year. He's just not going to recruit that level.
I actually think he could if he wanted to. I think he should. Well, we can get into it.
Yeah.
We are live at Peach, 2940 South, 300 West, Peach Doors and Windows. Come by and see us. We've got candy for you. We've got a KSL Sports t-shirt. We've got a jazz ornament. And, of course, when it comes to windows and doors, Ben, Peach is simply the best. We talk about it all the time, how different that they are, and different in such a good way. The final product is going to be different because it's going to be exactly what you want and not what the big box stores want you to have. But the whole process is different, Ben, from start to finish. They don't hand you off to subs. They're with you the entire way and want to make sure you have a good experience. It's truly what sets them apart.
Yeah, change your home without changing homes, right? Like, you can get that new home you've always dreamed of with your own home already by customizing with Peach Doors and Windows. Come on in. We've got beautiful doors in front of us. They can show you all the windows is back. They can take you throughout the showroom. It's really gorgeous. Come on in. Test them out. Stop by and say hi to us.
PeachBuildingProducts.com is the website. You can also call them 801-566-1255. And if you do want to come visit us today, 2940 South, 300 West, right here in Salt Lake City. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Down the biggest stories of the day. This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob N, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. I want to remind you to nominate the sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contests. And listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. All right, Sarah, where are we starting today?
Number one, Mark Pope, hired as Kentucky's head coach.
Sell me on Mark Pope. Give me a 30-second spiel that the athletic director at Kentucky is selling to fans.
He plays a very modern style of basketball that I think will be – I think will succeed at Kentucky.
Can I tell you, I think that is the number one thing? Other than I know he has the connections. And look, if Mark Pope hadn't played at Kentucky, he never gets this job. He's not even in consideration for this job. But he does have that history. He was a former captain. He did play in the NBA. All those things are pluses. All those things I think help. His style of basketball is really conducive to NBA players. He shoots a ton of threes, which is where the NBA is going. It's what kids want to do coming into college. It's what high school players are already doing. And then he already runs some pro sets. We talked a lot about how good that dribble handoff stuff was that nobody in the Big 12 ever figured out how to defend at all. Nobody could do it. Hans Olsen had a bunch of clips of Baylor just like leaving a wide open path for BYU's guards to go and get layups off of Ali Khalifa handoff. So I actually think that is the biggest thing, and that could be what ends up winning over fans in Kentucky is what it looks like to have an actual basketball coach and not a recruiter at Kentucky.
Right.
And the nice thing is, if you have the, again, there was a rumor of two donors combining to put up $4 million in NIL money this morning for Kentucky. And they were probably thrilled to do that because it meant they didn't have to pay an $18 million buyout for Coach Calipari. If he can use that money to get players, which is why, as you mentioned earlier, Nate Oates isn't leaving, Drew isn't leaving Baylor, you don't have to go to Kentucky to land recruits anymore. You can pay for recruits. If Mark Pope can get high level, not even elite John Calipari type recruiting classes, and then coach well, he can have a ton of success at Kentucky and could win over that program really quickly.
I think Kentucky could still get any, they'll have the dough and the clout to get any recruit they want. I will be curious. I mean, as far as recruiting rankings, which are silly and dumb anyway, he could stay at the top if he wanted to. I would be curious if he wants to. I think the teams that are the most successful, going to be the most successful in college basketball, are going to figure out the blend between development and transfers. And I say development because I think just sheer talent isn't going to win in college basketball anymore. If Cal has proven that, it's you can't get these young 18-year-olds that don't know how to play basketball that have a ton of potential raw talent and just win anymore because 22-year-olds are going to be better than 18-year-olds no matter how talented they are. There are going to be bigger, stronger, faster, more developed 22-year-olds that are going to be able to play like a team and beat the 18-year-old every time. So I will be curious to where Mark lands on the blending of Kentucky's advantages with new college basketball where one-and-dones aren't going to be
the fad.
I don't think that's going to be the thing anymore.
Here's what I worry about for Mark Pope, though, on the flip side. He's really late now getting into this recruiting class this year. A lot of the recruits are probably not going to stick with Kentucky, even if they have some money. They may go with Coach Cal. They may go to other proven schools if they transfer away from Kentucky. He's already losing arguably the best backcourt in college basketball in Rob Dillingham and Reed Sheppard. They're going to go to the NBA and be top 10 picks, I think. There's some hope that Sheppard would stick around. I don't see any chance that that happens. If he has a bad team next year, which is just the dregs and leftovers of what Coach Calipari didn't take to Arkansas and what he can bring from BYU, with all due respect to the players transferring from BYU, and doesn't win and doesn't turn that into recruiting momentum and belief within the fan base, if he has 2 years where he only has the same type of success that Coach Calipari had, but doesn't even have the recruiting classes that provide hope for Kentucky fans, he could be out of a job really quickly. And that would be my fear, that they only give him 2 seasons, maybe 3 seasons. And if he...
Oh, he won't get 3. Only, if you lose for 2, he...
If he loses 2, doesn't win a conference tournament game, and then isn't delivering top 10 recruiting classes, or let's even make it more elite, top 5 recruiting classes, with the bad start that they're off to now with the fan base not buying into him, it could be a short stay.
Yeah, I would say he doesn't even have... I mean, if he loses year 1, he'll be out. I mean, that's the problem with that job. And the fan base does have a lot to say about it. the reason Coach Cal isn't there anymore is because the fan base turned on him, in my opinion.
I told you, I was covering the Jazz game last night. It was up at the arena, and I was sitting next to a guy who I know is like the hardest core Kentucky fan I know. He pulled up a Twitter Spaces. If you don't know what that is, it's basically like a chat room of audio, and it's like a radio show on Twitter you can do. Within 15 minutes of Mark Pope getting hired, there were 20,000 people on this call. 20,000. That is rabid. I mean, that I've never seen that type of fan base.
Ben, we're back.
Where'd you go?
Had some technical difficulties.
Where did you go?
We're live at Peach, 2940 South, 300 West. Come on by and see us. Let's continue on with the top three stories. We'll get to Brian Taylor, who will join us coming up probably in about 5 minutes. But let's get to story number two. We talked about Mark Pope for number one. Sarah, what's number two?
Number two, the Jazz beat the Rockets.
Send off the home schedule with the victory. They finished the home record 21-20, a point of pride. Keontae George talked about it after the game, as did Will Hardy. They were happy to get that win, and I think Jazz fans were probably happy to see that 13-game losing streak broken.
Yeah, when they play hard and pass, they're a much better team. That's been true all year long. I really hate to just boil everything down to one simple statement, but Will Hardy said it, and he was totally right. And you could go back and pretty much look at every win and loss, and that boils down to the reason why.
They have really not won games with a one-man wrecking crew. You know, that has really just not been their pathway to victories. You're right. And ironically, and the guy I think a lot of people were talking about last night, you know who played the hardest and passed the best? Kenneth Lofton Jr. That dude was everywhere. He was playing great. He really does have great sense of moving the basketball. He plays his butt off in the paint. He really hustles out there. He's just an interesting kid. There's a reason why the Jazz gave him this second chance and why Memphis had taken a chance on him. He will be somebody to worth watching over the summer. We'll see if he can stick next year.
Well, it's amazing when someone runs down the floor and the other team doesn't just throw it down there and dunk on every possession.
Yeah.
And that wasn't true for the entire game even, but that was true for most of the game. I mean, there was another possession where Talen Horton-Tucker had a chase down block to save an easy hoop because the rest of the team was just standing there. You know what play I'm talking about?
Absolutely, yeah. It was I think it was Cam Whitmore after, and he ended up dunking on Cam Whitmore as well. Maybe it was Jeff Green, but yeah. Regardless, he ran back.
Hot
in transition.
Dog had to run the whole floor and block what was an easy layup for the Rockets because the rest of the team was just standing there. It's the darndest thing. But when the guys play hard, they play much better. Give me your thoughts on Keontae George. You mentioned earlier that you thought this was his best game in a while. 20 points, 7 of 14 shooting, 5 assists, 4 boards.
He is such a difficult shot maker. And the Jazz have really asked him to shoot a lot of threes that I think he kind of gets away from his game. And it's weird to be like, yeah, go take a bunch of running mid-range jumpers through contact. But, he's good at that. And it kind of gets him into his groove. And the Jazz have weeded some of that out of his game. And they made him really three-point heavy, and he's not a great three-point shooter right now. He's going to finish below 33% on the season, most likely. So he was hitting a lot of those mid-range shots, and he's done it all year. He has a funky rhythm against his ball handler because he's not like Colin Sexton quick. He's not as herky-jerky as Jordan Clarkson, how those two players get separation. But he's kind of an off-rhythm player, and he draws a lot of fouls that way. And I actually think that's when he's been at his best this season. And when he hasn't done that, maybe it's because he's not strong enough or he's tired or the Jazz are asking him not to, I think he kind of gets out of that rhythm. And then he's not as dynamic of an offensive player. So I kind of just thought the game came to him last night, which I liked. He wasn't stepping out there. One of my red flags with Keontae is if his first shot's a three every night, I think it's going to be a tough night for him.
I've been pretty consistent that I'm not all that worried about his shooting, even though it has been bad. It's rookies.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, his shot will be fine.
I can't decide if this is a major problem or a minor problem. He has a turnover problem.
It's a
big one. But his turnovers are brutal. They're just like egregious mistakes. Like in the fourth quarter when it's coming down the stretch last night, he just threw it out of bounds.
Yep.
Just sailed it out of bounds.
He overthrew Omer Yurtseman by 3 feet on one possession.
But
it's like bizarre.
That actually an easy problem to fix because it's so egregious? Does that make any sense? Because
of course.
Just don't throw it out of bounds. That seems like an easy problem to fix. I'm trying to decide how much his carelessness with the ball is a problem. Would it be more concerning if his turnovers were like Andre Karolinko ball handling?
Bojan Bogdanović would dribble into the paint and it would get swiped every time.
Yeah, right. I don't know. You can't really fix that. Like, Andrei Kirilenko couldn't dribble. You can't really fix that.
And their game was their game required them to do some of those things, but it was a problem when they did them, but they kind of had to do them to stay dynamic. Speaking of Bojan and Andrei Kirilenko.
So that's like a problem. I feel like I could teach a talented guard to not throw it out of bounds.
Keontae doesn't have to throw the ball out of bounds in transition. He does it all the time.
All the time.
It's crazy.
That should be an easy problem to fix, right?
I'm with you. But you know what should be an easy problem to fix is like Talen Horton-Tucker stop spinning into the paint and fading away on mid-range jump shots and airballing them.
Well,
and he still does it.
That's different though, because he's insubordinate.
Maybe.
No, he is. Why do you think he's been spending the entire season sitting on the bench? Who do you think I almost called him Quinn Snyder. Will Hardy was yelling at, where he said, if you're not going to play like this and play like you give a crap about the team, then you're not going to play. And then all of a sudden Talen isn't playing, and you think, well, that's who he was talking about. And then every time Talen gets in the game, he shoots 9 times and then doesn't play for another 3 games.
Like, to that point,
that's insubordination.
That's an easy fix, though, right? Just don't do it.
Well, no, because
Keontae's is like, just don't throw that pass. It's the old Quinn Snyder. You talked to Quinn about it at practice, and he said, see where that guy is on the other team? Don't throw him the ball. Like, that's how you stop
turnovers. Don't
throw
that pass. There's a guy there. It was the most brilliant analysis from a coach I've ever heard, and I mean that wholeheartedly.
And that is kind of part of what is going on with Keontae. It's like, just you see how
don't
tall.
Throw that pass.
You see how tall Omer is. Don't throw it 3 feet over his head.
Just don't do it.
Yeah, don't do that.
No.
So I'm with you. I don't think it's that big of a deal. He may always be a high turnover guy, though. Not 5 a game, but he might be always in the mid threes, which is a high number in the NBA.
But the problem is in the fourth quarter, you just can't throw it out of bounds. So
yep.
I even buy into, like, I don't even care if you turn the ball over a lot. It's like, what type of turnovers and when. And actually throwing it out of bounds isn't terrible because you don't give a fast break up to the other team. But you can't do that in the fourth quarter of a tie game.
Nope, you can't.
All right, 3, real quick.
Number 3, the Coyotes head coach addresses relocation reports.
These continue to roll out, and it's going to happen. I mean, this is talking to somebody last night at the basketball game who knows the situation well, says everything you have heard is true. It's just about landing the plane now, and that's where we are. And the fact that the coaches are talking about it, we'll see what the GM says about it. He goes on the radio a lot down in Arizona. Excuse me. I will be curious how quickly this gets done. It could be as quickly as the next week.
I think the plane's already been landed, honestly. My speculation. I mean, I've talked to a couple people like you have too, but I think the horse is already in the barn, and they just have to jettison the current owner. And that involves lawyers.
And it sounds like this weird situation where the NHL is going to buy it from him, and then Ryan Smith is going to buy it from the NHL. Like, almost they broker the deal, because it doesn't sound like Ryan Smith and Morello, this guy in Arizona who owns the team
currently,
are going
to do it
directly. There's no conversation there. They're not talking. This is all through Gary Bettman and the NHL.
Well, that's what the NBA did with the Hornets. I mean, that's not uncommon, I would say. Well, this doesn't happen a lot, so maybe it is uncommon, but I don't think that will get in the way. Maybe that's a better way to put it. All right, it's time to switch gears and talk a little golf. We have a Masters update for you. It's brought to you by Mountain Land Supply, Zions Bank, Black Desert Resort, Hoops Vision, and Siegfried and Jensen. Joining us now live from Augusta. You hear him every Saturday morning on Real Golf Radio. He's our buddy BT. What's happening, Brian?
What's up, boys? And like I said, on the Twitter there, nice to go to Peach for the Masters. That seems very appropriate. Well done.
Very appropriate. Absolutely. And we love Peach, of course, and we love the Masters. And Brian, let's get the latest. What's going on now? Homa's making a run?
Yeah, Homa's playing well. He's at 7-under par. He's tied for the lead currently with Bryson DeChambeau, who is even par through his first 2 holes. You know, it was birdie out of the gate, or excuse me, birdie on 2, birdie on 4 for Max Homa out of the gate to get to 7-under par. And I'll tell you what's great is he has made, you know, he's not shy about the fact that Tiger Woods is his childhood hero and that he, you know, was so relished the opportunity to play with him at St. Andrews a couple of years ago at the Open Championship. And you know, to be paired with him this week, he's over the moon. But he got a little too much into watching Tiger last time he played with him. And so this time he's just trying to stay and go about his business while appreciating that opportunity. And he's kind of showing off for him right now. You know, this is the best position that Max has been in a major championship. And he's playing really, really well, flawless. He just seems to be unflappable right now. It's not really – the moment doesn't seem to be catching up to him. And he's a very popular player out here amongst the fans. So it'll be interesting to see how this continues to play out.
Do we have kind of any growing idea of what the cut line is going to look like?
I think right now it's probably around plus two, and it could rise a little bit higher. The winds continue to be a problem for the players out on the golf course. Thankfully, the thunderstorms and the rain and everything that was threatening and delayed the start of Thursday's opening round is behind us, but the lingering winds are still swirling, keeping players guessing on which clubs to hit. And, you know, they're just such a small target area for these players into some of these greens that if you guess the wind wrong, it just kind of makes you look silly a little bit, and it can certainly cost you. So these players are having to take a little extra time and then really try to commit to their shots. So outside of that, it is blue skies. It's warming up a little bit out there, a little on the cooler side, probably in the high 60s, but it's supposed to get into the 80s for the weekend and just be absolutely sun-kissed and a beautiful weekend at the Masters.
Finau at 1-under, BT, and of course the cliche, you can't win it on the first day, but you can lose it on the first day. And from that perspective, I'm guessing Tony's probably pretty happy at 1-under.
I talked to him after his round yesterday, and he said he was very happy to get it in red numbers given the difficulty of the conditions of the day. If you look at Masters history, which is something that's always fun to look at, you know, the biggest comeback after 18 holes to win the Masters is 7 shots. So you start looking at all the players within 7 shots of Bryson DeChambeau after round number one, and that's the evens or better. So Tony was tucked in there nicely and, you know, with a shot, and he's just teed off his second round. So I would think that given his draw, he didn't have to come back out and finish any holes this morning, got it in plenty of time yesterday. In fact, probably had a little bit of the easier weather to begin with and the tougher conditions to finish yesterday, and then was able to get off this afternoon. Like I said, maybe about 10, 15 minutes ago, he's off and running and playing right now. So he actually got a pretty good draw. We'll see how Tony plays out. I'll be out following him for most of the afternoon and looking forward to seeing how he gets around Augusta today.
I know there was some question just about whether Tiger could even walk the course for an entire weekend. How has he looked in that regard? I know he's plus one.
Yeah, so this morning he looked a little bit more labored. You know, it was cold this morning, chilly anyway, and that's probably his worst enemy is the cold. You know, you guys have all, if you've had any kind of injury or whatever, when it's cold out, it just seems to be harder to get going. And so that seemed to factor in. He was 2 over on the restart, ended up getting a 1 over for the tournament after the first round. And he's out there playing. You know, most of the time, I would say yesterday and even after those first few holes today, he's actually moving pretty well. Last year, we were standing right there with him as he came up after making the cut in the second round, but happened to withdraw and seeing him and talking to him. And he was he looked in bad shape, really bad. And he looks remarkably better. He did, you know, admit that he is in pain every single day. So it's not that it's gone away by any means. And in his words, will never go away. That's his life. That's what he has to deal with. But he said he loves it. He still loves the competition, loves to be out there in the middle of it all. And he's excited and is giving everything he's got out there right now.
What's DeChambeau doing right?
Yeah, everything. I mean, he's leading in greens, he's leading in putts, he's leading in birdies. You know, this is such an interesting story because it was only a few years ago that Bryson came out and audaciously said that his par around Augusta National is 67, I think is what the number was, 68, 67, something like that. And, you know, whenever somebody comes out like that against a golf course like Augusta, you just kind of give them the side eye like, okay, Bryson. And he went on and missed the cut 2 years in a row. And so didn't really give him much credibility coming into this week, and yet here he goes and does what he did. And he admitted, you know, he kind of retracted. He ate his words. He said, I shouldn't have said that. He has a healthy respect. And, in fact, his comments even suggested that he said, this is a golf course where placement is so important. You can't – so many people think you can just bomb it around here, and that's not the case. And I just chuckled when he said that because I'm like, you are the one that said that. You could do that. And now he's backing off on that, and it seems to have – you know, even in his own words, matured a little bit in his approach to this golf course, his reverence for it, his approach, his conservative. He has gotten a lot more conservative in nature as far as how he approaches this golf course, and it's paying off right now. So, you know, I think Bryson has, you know, maybe learned something that a lot of the big hitters and the greats have learned, is that you've got it in the tank doesn't mean you have to use it on every shot, especially around here.
You mentioned talking to Tony, but what do we have on tap for tomorrow's Masters edition of Real Golf Radio?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of great sound. I thought the chairman's press conference was really good. There's a lot of initiatives that Augusta is behind and also weighed in on some of the rules changes that have been presented by the USGA and the RNA. So we'll talk about some of those and hear from Chairman Ridley and his comments. We're going to catch up with Tony after his second round, so we'll have first and second round sound from Tony. Of course, America's favorite caddy, always stopping by, and then sound from all those in contention. So, and then, you know, see some of our friends from the media that might stop by as well. It's always a fun show. It's a privilege to be here every year, and appreciate you guys giving us the opportunity to share it with you and your listeners during your show this week.
BT, you're the best, buddy.
The
we'll be dialed in tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.
Egg salad sandwiches all around. Let's go.
Jealous. Thanks, BT.
See you, boys.
You an egg salad guy?
I like egg salad, but Brian and Bob, during the – remember the Masters, the Pandemic Masters, where they did it later in the year or whatever, and they didn't let people come. And so for the media, like Bob and Brian, they let them order food. So they mailed food to the media. And so – they brought in the sandwiches for everybody to try.
Oh, how was it?
Egg salad sandwiches for everybody to try. Amazing.
Yeah, it held up.
I like chicken salad way better than I like chicken salad way better than egg salad, but that egg salad was pretty good.
You a big mustard guy in your egg salad or no?
No. Well, you got to have a little bit, right? But you can't mustard as a condiment in general can overpower.
Yeah.
So it can't be too much mustard.
It's got that tartness.
Don't want to
mustard guy.
All right. We are live at Peach Doors and Windows, 2940 South, 300 West. Please feel free to drop by and see us, grab some free stuff we've got, but really check out what they've got when it comes to windows and doors. And, Ben, we're sitting in the showroom. First of all, the showroom is great, but it's spacious and lovely and clean and just wonderful. But you can see all the variety of stuff that you can do to your house. It's pretty amazing. You think windows and doors, you just think something, you know, simple, and actually it can be something far from simple and more really beneficial to your home from a look standpoint, from a function standpoint, from an energy standpoint. If you're looking to make an investment in your house, it's a great place to start.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like I said, you can change your home without changing homes. If you want to have the dream house that you've always thought about, you can do it with Peach Doors and Windows. You don't have to put your house up for sale and try and find another house with a high interest rate. It's not what you have to do. You can fix your home up, customize it, get exactly what you're looking for, all the while improving your efficiency inside your home as well.
All right, you can go online. It's a great place to start, peachbuildingproducts.com. You can call, schedule a free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. That's 801-566-1255. Or simply drop by their showroom and see us, 2940 South, 300 West, right here in Salt Lake. It's Peach Doors and Windows. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.